please won't you be my neighbor? Welcome to this neighborhood, neighbor.
So maybe Mr. Rogers was right, and every neighbor is a potential friend, someone worth inviting over, getting to know. On the other hand, maybe the weird guy next door will turn out to be Jeffrey Dahmer. That's what actually happened to the artist and alternative cartoonist Derf Backderf. He grew up in the 1970s in the small town of Richfield, Ohio, and among his circle of friends was a kid everyone knew as Jeff. Jeff Dahmer. Not a serial killer or a cannibal yet, just a weird kid with some problems. Backderf writes about his former neighbor in a graphic novel called My Friend Dahmer. Steve Paulson asked him to take us back to July 22nd, 1991, the day we all found out about Jeffrey Dahmer's crimes.
Put yourself in my place. You know, you go through your adolescence. I can't say that I enjoyed it, but it was a very typical kind of goofball adolescence, nothing that was really too horrible. And then with the flick of a switch, suddenly that entire era is completely redefined in an utterly chilling, sinister way as you realize that you had this fiend, emerging fiend, winding his way through your personal history. So I had a lot of things going on to deal with. Psychologically, I suppose, is the best way to put it.
Your book is called My Friend Dahmer. How close a friend were you?
Well, that's what the book is about. He wasn't what I would call part of my inner circle, but we were, me and my friends, were probably as close to friends as he had. I mean, this was a kid who was missing chunks of his humanity from a very early age.
Did you realize that at the time?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So there's something just really odd about him, weird.
Yeah, right from the beginning. Yeah, absolutely. And we're talking, I mean, I met him when we were 12, so, and continued our friendship up until we were 18, and 2 weeks after our high school graduation, he killed his first victim here in Ohio.
But that didn't come to light until years later.
Until years later, right. But we were very, very close to that. I mean, you know, within a couple hundred yards of that, really. That's, I mean, it's things like that are the things that I really had the most trouble dealing with.
So you said it was always obvious that this guy was really strange. What did he do that was so different?
Well, he didn't relate to people the way other people would. I mean, you know, from the very beginning, he was probably the loneliest kid that I'd ever met. Later on, he began to act out. I assumed it was a way to interact with people because he started to get attention for it. And, you know, it sort of steamrolled from there. He would fake epileptic fits in the mall or in school. He would pretend he had cerebral palsy. He bleated like a sheep in class. And it sounds terrible, but keep in mind we were 15 years old and bored to death, and anything out of the ordinary was both fascinating and amusing.
So he was going for laughs. He was trying to get a rise out of the kids around him.
Absolutely. And then later, and this I reflect in the book becomes darker and darker, and more claustrophobic as it unfolds. His behavior became darker, and particularly the drinking. He was a heavy drinker. Mainly he was self-medicating, trying to quell these hideous urges that were just taking him over.
The way you depict this in your book, I mean, it's shocking how much he drank. I mean, apparently he came in to school totally plastered.
Yeah. He would walk around the halls of the school with a styrofoam coffee cup from a coffee machine in the cafeteria. It was full of scotch or whiskey, you know, some dark liquid that looked like coffee, walking right through the halls of the school. Now, keep in mind, this is a very different era, and I try to get that across in the book that, you know, it was not 2012. I mean, it was 1978, 1977. It was a completely different society, completely different era, but still, that's a little... That's a little hard to explain away.
Yeah, it's a little unbelievable when you say there are times when he was passed out, literally, on the school grounds. I mean, how could no adult actually see this?
Right. Yeah, I have no explanation for it. Either they didn't care or, you know, they didn't want to be bothered. And by the time that it got really bad, he was already a senior, and they figured, well, you know, in a couple months, he'll be somebody else's problem. Well, he was somebody else's problem. And it is a very tragic and troubling element of this story, and one of the reasons I find it so fascinating and wanted to get it down is that it's really unbelievable that he got away with what he got away with. Now, he had a skill for that, which he employed with very lethal effectiveness later in life, as you well know.
Why do you think he was drinking so much?
I believe that he was self-medicating, and this is what Jeff himself says. I mean, he didn't feel that he could approach anyone else. about what was going on in his head. I mean, how do you go up to someone and say, hey, you know, I'm fantasizing about dead bodies? You know, that's not going to happen. And he was trying to, anyway, just you know, tamp down these horrible urges that were in his head and virtually taking, threatening to take him over body and soul. And this was what he came up with. And for a while, I mean, in the book, you know, I think it was almost a heroic struggle. I know that people have trouble attaching that word to Jeffrey Dahmer. But remember, the Dahmer that I knew had committed no crime. He was just this horribly troubled kid marching inexorably toward the abyss as the adults in his life failed to intercede. And, I mean, put yourself in his shoes. Where would he go? That's what he came up with.
You mentioned that you were part of something called the Dahmer Fan Club. What was that?
It was this small group of band nerds, my inner circle. There was maybe five or six of us. And we, for a while, pulled him into our circle and encouraged him to act up and act out. Of course, it was all meant in jest. You know, I've been criticized periodically that, you know, we were cruel or dismissive of him. And that's not really the case. I mean, Dahmer himself remembered that time very fondly. It was very likely the happiest time of his life because he had friends and he was the center of attention in a good way. I mean, as good as it got for him anyways.
You write about one episode when you basically egged him on to act out, to do his thing in a shopping mall.
Right. We paid him like $35 to put on a command performance, we called it. And it was an epic, legendary afternoon, yeah. But then as his behavior got so dark that eventually we just, one by one, just pushed him away.
Just to follow up on that one incident, what happened that afternoon?
He walked around the mall throwing various epileptic fits, you know, bleeding at people. He knocked over glasses of water at a restaurant and pretended he was having fits, that sort of thing. As we followed him around in a large pack of 10 or 12 teenagers laughing and cackling, and he got away with it. And that was pretty much all that happened that day. You know, looking back on it, even at that time, by the end of the day, I was pretty creeped out. And that was actually kind of the end of my time with him, because after that, I distanced myself from him.
What was it that creeped you out about him?
Well, the drinking, first of all, which I saw firsthand. He downed an entire six-pack of beer on the way to the mall in the space of about 6 or 7 minutes.
He drank six cans of beer in 6 minutes?
Yeah. It just made my skin crawl watching it in the rearview mirror. And that was it really came into focus for me just how troubled this kid was at that point. And so I pushed him away. And, you know, people have called me out on that. And there are no heroes in my story. I mean, everybody fails, including, of course, Jeff himself. But I'm not going to apologize for pushing him away because instinctively, that was a pretty darn good instinct to have. It could have well been me cut up in the trunk of his car a couple weeks later. So I'm not going to apologize for that, but it certainly was the last kind of shove toward what awaited him.
Yeah. So on the one hand, you could say, well, he was dealt a really bad deck of cards, and as we said, his home life was a mess. He couldn't connect with people. He was the people around him, the society around him failed him, and yet when you look at the crimes, I mean, later, rape, dismemberment, necrophilia, sure, cannibalism, I mean, that sounds like insanity.
Well, it sure does. My view, I think I laid this out pretty clearly, is that once he starts to kill, I lose all sympathy for him. I mean, to some degree, he chose to give in to these urges and become the monster that we all know. And at that point, the only tragedy is that he just didn't have the courage to put a gun to his head and end it, because, I mean, what did he have to live for? The book itself does not portray a sympathetic portrait of Dahmer the monster. This is Jeff, the kid that I knew. This is the story before that story, and it you know, it's important to clarify that.
Now, there are some very chilling scenes in your book. One of them is you talk about a friend, your friend Mike, who mm-hmm. had given Dahmer a ride home in his car, and right. apparently, based on the timeline that you reconstructed, you figured out that the body of Dahmer's first victim was probably buried just yards away from...
Not buried, in garbage bags, just yards away.
Yeah, garbage bags.
Yeah. Unburied, yeah.
When you think back on that, I mean, were you in danger?
Well, we have talked about that. I take comfort somewhat in knowing that he never killed people that he knew, only strangers, like most serial killers. But, you know, who knows? I mean, if he had snapped, especially that first murder, that was just total impulse. You know, he didn't plan anything. It wasn't like the other murders where he stalked people. This was just some kid he picked up near the mall who was trying to hitch his way home. And it's, you know, just the randomness of it is just so troubling. It's the old warning from your mother. Don't hitchhike. You'll be picked up by a serial killer. Well, this kid was. Dahmer just lost control for a second, and within minutes, he was a monster. He had killed. And could that have happened to any of us? Well, you know, who knows? I'm glad I didn't have a chance to find out.
In 1994, a few years after Dahmer was arrested, he was beaten to death by an inmate in prison.
Right.
How did you feel when you heard about that?
You know, I was actually kind of surprisingly upset by that. I had not been in contact with Jeff. I never made an attempt to reach out to him. But at that time, he was only the second high school friend that I had lost, so I guess that's somewhat understandable. And then, you know, I was kind of upset that I was upset, and so why am I mourning this guy in any way? But, you know, personal relationships are hard to explain away easily sometimes.
You've said that once Dahmer killed, once he claimed his first victim, then your sympathy totally goes out the window. I mean, you know, he's crossed the line. He's beyond the pale.
Sure.
But before that, were you trying to sympathize with him? I guess the question is, what were you trying to do with this book? Were you trying to humanize Jeffrey Dahmer?
Oh, absolutely. As I said, the Jeff that I knew had committed no crime. He was not an inhuman monster. He was a person who had inhuman urges, but he certainly was not a monster. And I think that there are lessons there to be learned. Well, maybe not lessons, but it certainly is a cautionary tale. And I don't think we do ourselves any favor when we just write these people off as monsters, because there's a certain inevitability that comes with that. You know, oh, he was a monster. It was inevitable that it happened. Well, I don't think it was inevitable. I think if somebody had acted, if somebody, particularly an adult, had gotten this kid, red flagged this kid, gotten him some help, that maybe some of this could have been stopped. Maybe not. Maybe it was inevitable, but it sure would have been nice if somebody had tried.
Derf Back Derf, talking with Steve Paulson about his graphic novel, My Friend Dahmer.